All right, you want to introduce yourself? Say hi.
Okay. Hey, it's Eugene Daniels, White House correspondent and Playbook co-author. If you hear noises in the background, that is a garbage truck visiting me in the alley behind my apartment. So,
So popular. You have garbage trucks visiting you.
We have an audience. There's an audience today.
This is a live Politico Dispatch recording exactly. In front of you.
Exactly.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And today,
the day before a big day, I like iron all my clothes and I get them ready and I throw them out and I like literally put them down as if a human is in them on the bed just to double check that it's like, okay, this is going to be cute. And I did that. I remember doing that very specifically my freshman year.
We're not just talking about trash. We're talking freshman year.
When you're a freshman in high school, it feels like that's as big as it's going to get on a first day. But these freshman men and women have me beat by a lot.
Eugene Daniels, on a series of conversations he had with three freshman lawmakers and what they tell us about this moment in American politics.
I mean, we did this series in 2019 as well, and it's something that I think we forget as political reporters is that these people are also human. Mm-hmm. And shocker. And so the goal of it is always like, okay, what makes this person tick? Hmm. What are their policy proposals? How do they see their party? All of these questions that in the grand scheme of things really tell you something about where we are as a country.
So let's talk about some of these members of Congress. First, Byron Donalds. Mm-hmm. He's one of just two Black Republicans in the House right now. What was your conversation with him like?
Spicy?
What I have always said is that there were violations of election law by state officials and local officials in key states. The perfect example is the NFC Championship game between the Green Bay Packers and the Dallas Cowboys. I know that because I'm a Cowboys fan. And it was a catch.
I'm a Cowboys fan from
because Cowboys are always on TV in New York.
We talked for actually almost an hour. You know, his staffer was like, oh my God, we have to leave. And I kept, both me and the congressman were like ignoring the staffer. Because I think Donalds was kind of enjoying the sparring as well.
I contracted COVID-19.
In October.
I still have antibodies. I get tested once a month now about my antibody count.
So when you no longer have antibodies, are you going to get the vaccine?
I may not. I have the decision to make for myself. Do I want to take the vaccine or not? I don't take flu vaccines.
He holds views that are controversial on COVID-19, safety measures. He doesn't believe that systemic racism exists.
It doesn't exist today.
Today it doesn't exist?
No, it doesn't exist today. 100 years ago, if you had told me there was systemic racism in the United States, I would have said absolutely there was. Today in the United States, no. No.
Congressman, I mean, you can look at the numbers. And in fact, the pandemic has shown us all of those things hit Black and brown people the hardest because of the boundaries that have already been in place.
If you want to unleash systemic anything that disenfranchises one subset of Americans over another, you need to have more freedom and more opportunities, not less.
He voted against the certification of the Electoral College. So there are all these things about him that are also tell you a larger story about the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. And like you said, there aren't a lot and have not been a lot of Black Republicans in Congress, right?
Yeah.
The fact that they have two right now is kind of a big deal. And so that aspect of it made the conversation kind of, pardon my language, but colored with this question that people often have is, if you are Black, how are you a Republican?
Back to the question of whether or not the Republican Party has issues of race, it seems that the answer is true.
I've been hypercritical about the party on this one, because when you never go and see somebody, the natural inclination is you don't care about that person. And the thing I always tell them is, just go. Go sit and listen. And once you have that baseline of communication, that baseline of relationship, then you could talk about your policies and the thing you support, and people would be more receptive to it. If there's one thing I'll change about my party, it's that very fact.
And so it's things like that that it tells you a lot about this person, but also this party, the struggle for the party trying to figure out who they are. Is Trumpism the way to go or not? And I think he and I went, especially on the systemic racism bit, there was a very long back and forth.
Another lawmaker you spoke to is Congresswoman Nikema Williams. Mm-hmm. She represents Georgia's 5th District. She took the mantle from John Lewis, who obviously has a massive legacy as an activist and in Congress. Mm-hmm. Those are big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
Tell me about the lawmaker who is now stepping in those shoes and what you learned from talking with her.
Jeremy, I don't think she sees it as like stepping into his shoes, right? This is someone who was her mentor. Her husband actually worked for John Lewis. And so I really think that she knows with someone as big as John Lewis, there's no reason to even pretend that you could fit their shoes. So she's bringing her own shoes.
Being here in Congress and representing the 5th Congressional District, I understand everything that he has already laid the blueprint for. And it's frustrating that there are still things that he was fighting for 56 years ago, like the right to vote, and looking at what is happening back in Georgia right now around voter suppression, and yet we're still fighting for that right now.
The thing about the Congresswoman is that she came from a very poor background growing up. And so she has an outlook on Congress that most people haven't had, right? When we think about members of Congress, we used to think of white older men who are from well-off families and families were in politics. And that's not who she is. And she actually, you know, became kind of famous for getting arrested for protesting the 2018 Georgia gubernatorial race.
Hugs and applause greeted Georgia State Senator Nikema Williams as she walked out of the Fulton County Jail Tuesday night. Earlier in the day, Capitol Police escorted her out of the state capitol in handcuffs.
I was singled out as a Black female senator standing in the rotunda with constituents in the Capitol, a body that I serve in.
Williams told us she joined protesters who were demanding provisional ballots are counted in the state governor's race.
And so this is a person who, when you talk about grassroots, that's what's in her. And so she's bringing her own self and the way that she thinks about politics to D.C.
And my very first race, I had someone tell me that I should use Nikki on my yard signs and not Nikema because I would get more votes. And so I fully understand that I'm operating in a system that was not designed by or for people who look like me, but I'm determined to make it work for people who look like me.
And so people like Nikema Williams are perfect examples of what everyone says when they say, you know, we need a Congress that looks like America, right? We need a Congress that thinks like America. And despite whatever you may think about our politics, you know, it's important that more Black women are in Congress because there are a lot of Black women in the country and in the Democratic Party. And so I think that aspect of it is kind of what's really fascinating about her. And, you know, just the idea that this is someone who I never got to meet John Lewis. And so just knowing, like talking to her about him and what he brought, it's a fascinating look at how connections with the past can really tell you a lot about where someone wants to go in the future.
The last freshman congressperson I wanted to talk with you about is Richie Torres of New York. Who is he, and what was your conversation with him like?
So Richie Torres is a Afro-Latino openly gay man. He was the youngest person to be on the New York City Council when he was 25 years old, which like, okay, overachiever. so like, okay, thanks for making me feel bad. But he is someone who, interestingly enough, feels very introverted.
My three highest priorities are a permanent expansion of the child tax credit, funding for public housing, and third, vouchers for all, housing vouchers for all. You know, housing is a human right, and no family in need should pay more than 30% of their income toward their rent.
He's very, not cautious, I don't think that's, but he is very measured. Mm-hmm. And I think he knows what he wants to say and has thought a lot about things. So he feels like he's like a nerd. He's like this kind of like intellectual, and I say nerd with love because I'm also a nerd. So he like, you know, when you ask him a question, it's clear that he's thinking about it.
You've also talked openly about struggling with substance abuse, with depression, having suicidal thoughts at times.
I bring an unusual set of lived experiences to Congress. About 15 years ago, I dropped out of college because I found myself struggling with depression. And I would not be alive today were it not for mental health care, which saved my life.
He's someone who talked about, you know, growing up with a single mom who had to work many jobs to make sure that they had food on the table. So he thinks about child poverty quite a bit.
I think we are all products of our lived experiences. I actually grew up in a public housing development right across the street from Trump Golf Course. And so when the golf course was undergoing construction, it unleashed a skunk infestation.
Oh.
What was striking about that experience is I saw the city government invest more than $100 million for a gilded gated golf course for Donald Trump.
And he is someone who is openly gay. And I think I am, people can probably tell from how I talk, but I am gay, openly gay and black, openly black. And so it's something to talk to an openly gay member of Congress who looks like you.
Well, it's interesting hearing you talk about that experience and also thinking about how so many lawmakers in this freshman class are making history, how it's the most diverse ever. But at the same time, things are extremely tense in Washington. There was an insurrection right after they were sworn in. How is all of this meshing together in your mind while you think about it, like as a reporter and a person?
It's hard because, you know, our job is to talk to really smart people all day and tell people what they said, right? Like that is when it comes down to it, that's what being a reporter is. Mm-hmm. But also to reflect back to them the concerns that are in this country. And I think, you know, I'm only 32, so I don't have decades of working to compare it to, but I can't think of, as a student of history, a time where, other than like the civil rights movement, where it felt this hard in like, you know, modern history, like this hard to have a conversation, people asking, looking at the other side and saying, do you see my humanity? Because that's what it comes down to, right? I think the issues that we have come down to, do you see my humanity? And every 2 years we get a more diverse Congress, right? You have more women, you have more LGBTQ+, you have more people of color. And that is only good for the country, right? If both parties are becoming more diverse in who they're sending to Congress, that is only good, right? That is good for everybody. And that is a nonpartisan statement.
Eugene Daniels, thanks so much for talking with me.
Anytime, Jeremy. Thanks for having me.
Also, today, the process of redrawing America's political maps has begun. The Census Bureau kicked off the year-long redistricting scramble on Monday with its announcement of congressional reapportionment, changing the number of House seats each state will have for the next decade. Here's a quick rundown of the changes. Oregon, Montana, Colorado, North Carolina, and Florida are all gaining a seat. Texas is gaining two, and California, Illinois, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and New York are losing one. The changes will take effect beginning in the 2022 midterms. And the Justice Department is opening a policing probe in Louisville, Kentucky, over the March 2020 death of Breonna Taylor, who was shot to death by police during a raid at her home. Attorney General Merrick Garland announced the move on Monday. It'll focus on whether the Louisville Metro Police Department engages in a pattern of unreasonable force. It comes after last week, Garland announced a probe into the tactics of Minneapolis police following the killing of George Floyd. Subscribe to Politico Dispatch wherever you get your podcasts. And to continue following Eugene Daniels' reporting, be sure to sign up for the Politico Playbook newsletter at politico.com/newsletters. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.
Everyone's trying to be Michael Barbaro. It's like, girl, there's already a Michael Barbaro. Be yourself. Like, there's just no reason. No reason.